Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Envision podcast. My name is Karthik and I will be your host for today's episode. On this podcast, we bring together people who have a positive impact on the blind and visually impaired community from across the world and share their stories with you. Today on our podcast, we have Morten Bond, Senior Art Director at Lego, an author, a creative speaker and a storyteller. Today, he will let us dive into his world and share his story about losing his vision and about turning it into something more empowering and how sometimes great creativity comes from great constraints. So welcome, Morten. It's a great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Awesome. So, you know, when I start this podcast, we usually start with people's origin stories, right? And I want to know, what's your origin story? You know, where did you grow up and, you know, your childhood years? And who were your biggest influences growing up, right? Because I think that has a huge influence on your later life as well. So I want to know who your biggest influences were growing up as a kid, right?
Yeah. Well, I live in Denmark in a small town, fairly small town, approximately 2 hours drive from Copenhagen. And I just turned 48. And that's a curious thing, because when you reach that age, for me at least, I can't remember if I'm turning 47 or 48. So I really had to calculate. So, but we, you know, 48 it is. And I have had a fairly normal childhood in a you know, safe environment with a couple of brothers and nice parents and I grew up being really inspired by soccer players. So in Denmark it was Michael Laudrup and Brian Laudrup, and I was just we were just constantly playing soccer on the field and pretending that we were these great players.
I can totally, you know, empathize with that, because in India, where I'm from, cricket is a big thing, right? So a lot of kids, including me, we all grew up looking up to cricketers and playing cricket on the streets, you know, very similar to what it is in Denmark, I think.
Yeah,
right. And you know, was art and and art and creativity always a part of you growing up, or was it something that, you know, became a part of your life maybe when you got into university? And how was your university days like, and was that sort of where the whole creativity aspect and the art aspect of your later career came into?
Well, I always had an interest in drawing, and it was I was drawing superheroes like Superman and Batman and Spider-Man, and I just loved the flow state that you get into when you just sit and maybe listen to music and just disappear into sketching. And so that was kind of natural for me to seek what I, you know, later in life turned out to become, which was working with advertising and creating visuals.
Interesting. And what was, you know, your first, so when you came out of university and when you're getting into the workforce, right? What were your early days of your career look like? And again, you know, did that have a big impact, or did people there in your very early stages have a big impact on your career later down the line?
Oh, well, I think it, you know, I started out doing something else. I was actually a sales consultant selling hi-fi equipment, and that was totally different. And I think I reached the age of around 26, I think, and I realized that, you know, I'm in the wrong line of work. I'm not thriving. It's not what I'm really passionate about. So I started all over, and I took a course, you know, a 3-year course in communication and creative thinking and communication, and then I got a job in an advertising industry. It's sort of a 2-year apprenticeship. I think I was just slowly learning how to become an art director. And then, you know, I worked from there, and I was working in the in the advertising industry with a lot of different clients for about 10 years until I decided that I wanted to try to work for the Lego Group, which was completely different because it was one brand and it was much more storytelling. And I also like the aspect of just, you know, trying to find that, you know, inner 6-year-old, 8-year-old child again, and just pretend that you were a policeman catching crooks. And that was just so, you know, liberating and wonderful.
Amazing, you know, and before I go into the whole Lego thing, which is super, super interesting, because Lego has been a huge part of my life. And I know so many other people who's part, who have basically grown up with Legos. Could you talk to us a little bit about what an art director does, right? It's it might be quite interesting for a lot of people listening to the podcast to know what is an art director and what he or she does.
Yeah, it's the title that is a little bit puzzling, because you would think, you know, I'm doing art and looking at art, but it's actually when I try to explain it really, really in short, is that an art director is transforming maybe a complex problem into visuals and images that easily makes a complex problem easy to understand. So for instance, a company has this new awesome technology or this machine or this invention, which, you know, engineers have spent years developing, and they can talk about it for months in very complex terms. But how do you make that easy to understand for the consumer and the customer? And I think that's our finest mission to transform that into something that is so easy to understand that you just instantly know this is something for me.
Interesting. And I think, you know, it is, and when you said that, you know, you've been working with so many different brands and all of a sudden you have to go work with one brand, right? What was your experience like working at Lego? You know, was it a very different company from the other companies you've worked for? And in what way was it really different? And how did that really impact your personality or your life in what way, you know?
Well, there are several things, actually. I was working in smaller agencies with like 15, 17 people. And now I was in a company that is so much more and so huge. So also I was making mostly advertisements and TV commercials for the domestic market, like in, you know, in Denmark, but in Scandinavia. But here it was like all of a sudden it was just the world. Wide. So there is a adaptation into understanding how do a child think in India, in China, in, you know, all parts of the world, America. And that was really, really interesting, because I came from this sort of perception that, well, when I think this, it must be applicable for everyone. Like, so all of a sudden I had to sort of adapt into that, you know, there are different customs, there are different traditions. And so that was interesting and really, really something that evolved me in it becoming more sort of embracing to diversity and you know, so that there are so many different ways to live, and I think one of the greatest things actually was that I got a lot of friends from all around the world, and the way that I was thinking was sometimes different than the way they were thinking, but it taught me to sort of, hey, I don't have to, you know, get stuck in this way of being a Dane and thinking in this way. I can actually adapt from this culture and from this culture. And so it's just, that was great. And that's one of the things I loved the most from having been working for the Lego Group for so many years.
Yeah, no, I think it's the beauty of building a product for an international audience is that you get to experience the mindset of so many different cultures, and it's very different from your own, you know, experience. And I think it broadens your, you know, your human experience as a whole, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was really, that's a gift that I'm cherishing, to get so many friends from different parts of the world. That's amazing.
That's really interesting. And, you know, I'm really curious, right? Like, how does a 30 something, you know, get into the mind of a 6-year-old? Like, you know, did you have to go talk to a lot of kids, or how was that process like trying to make something for children, you know, when you're an adult?
I sometimes smile when I look at my colleagues. We are we never really grew up, I think. And when my kids at the age of 18 and 15, and they sometimes they look at me and say, "Dad, grow up." So I think we all kind of just you know boys in this adult bodies with yeah, beard, and but in a way we never really grew up. That's what I feel, at least. So it's very easy for me just to close my eyes, and then a lot of silly stories turn up in my head when I look at situations in everyday life, and then sometimes I imagine it could be a fun story if this situation that I'm looking at now was like this in a Lego City environment, for instance. And then it starts from there. It's just imagination, pure imagination. And then trusting in our ability to just relax into storytelling. Don't force anything. Just, you know, just take a deep breath and just close your eyes and then see what our amazing imagination just, you know, delivers us. Actually, it's just sometimes channeling what is coming.
Interesting. And so now you've been working, you know, at Lego, and you've had this amazing this career that's going on. And I think, you know, that's when you did retinitis pigmentosa come into your life at that point in time. What were the initial days of you realizing, okay, you've got to now live with blindness? What were those initial days like? And what would you say, you know, were the sort of factors that helped you come out of it? Right. Or rather accept it, rather not coming out of it, but accepting it. Right. When did that phase actually start?
Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 29. That's back in 2002. And I was experiencing some weird things with my vision that when I was invited to play badminton. I had been playing badminton when I was a child. So having had a break for almost 10 years and getting back on the court and playing, weird things happened, because in the middle of a match, I was just looking up, and then the ball just, you know, shuttlecock or what it's called, just did disappeared. And I couldn't really explain what was happening. And then I was examined, and they realized and told me that I had retinitis pigmentosa, and then that I would slowly lose my sight over years. And I remember that was just too much information to wrap your head around. I just maybe just told myself a story that, you know, this is not nothing to do with me. It's not that bad right now. So let's just, you know, pretend it's not there. And then I continued for many years, and until 16, where my body just, you know, shook me and woke me up and said, you know, this doesn't work. You have to confront that you are losing sight. At that point, I had 4 degrees of vision left, which is very little. And I was just finding ways to cope and to master the situation. And at the end, my body just said, no more.
And at that point in time, you know, when your body said no more, I'm sure it you know, everybody has that point where they really confront the limitations, you know, the physical limitations, right? And then it becomes, I think, more of a mental game, and it becomes about an acceptance and moving on and adapting. What was what was that phase like, you know, for you when you had to finally confront this this thing that you have been ignoring for so long? And what were the tools that helped you, I would say, in a way, accept it and adapt? You know, what were the tools, both mental, physical, or even technological, right? Really curious to know about what that confrontation was and what were the tools, how did you adapt to it?
Yeah, well, the realization came when I, you know, started suffering from stress and depression also. So I was in a very dark place. And I had one moment, one day when I was sitting in the local job center, which is a place where we needed to figure out how can I adapt to this? How can I, you know, arrange my life so that it wouldn't be such a struggle? And there I had this very strange moment when I realized all of a sudden that I had built up a lot of identities that I needed to cling on to in order to be me and to finally having this experience that everything in one moment just fell off, like all my identities died in one moment when I couldn't, you know, I couldn't see a way for me to live with no sight. And when that pain got so intense, I had this liberation from it almost, like, and I realized that I am not all these identities. And that was just, you know, I don't know what it was. I sometimes call it divine inspiration or whatever. That sounds so grandiose, but I had this very, very, very intense feeling that I needed to figure out how to be happy with vision loss and to make it my ally instead of making it my enemy.
And, you know, when you say that you had these identities that you had to get rid of, do you think that's something that, you know, do you think you replace that with newer identities of yourself? Do you think identity is something that evolves over time? Or do you think that, you know, there's, I mean, human beings shouldn't inherently have identities?
I think we have a personality when we start out. Like, we are really, really programmed, you know, genetically. But I think then life programs us into becoming the persons and the personalities that we are. So I think identities is something that they are habits. They are taught and they are learned habits that we play out automatically in our lives. And I started getting curious about that because I had a lot of negativity in myself. I had a lot of self-talk that was blaming me and was hindering me and talking not very nicely to me in my mind. So I started looking into how can you change that? How can you make that inner voice a voice who talks very nicely to you and encourages you? And every time you stand in a situation where you think, I can't do this, how can you create an inner voice that says, go for it, you can do it, I know you can do it, we can do it together? So that was an intense project that I gave myself to change that automatic response that says, oh, I can't do this, and well, I'm going to be blind, so I might as well just, you know, resign or give up. And so that was the inspiration for going on this journey and writing the book and talking about it and sharing it.
Yeah, no, I think it's amazing because I really want to touch upon the book itself, which is Sentence to Blindness, Now What? It's a really interesting title, because, you know, you almost talk about it in the title seems like as if, you know, like blindness is some kind of it doesn't have to be like some kind of a punishment that's given to you, right? It's something that, you know, you can accept and even make a part of your identity. And so, you know, what does the book talk about in that sense? And does it talk about specific tools that you have used, you know, to overcome? Could you touch upon a little bit about those tools that you have mentioned in your book?
Yeah, sure. The title is, it was how I felt when I was told that I have retinitis pigmentosa, I felt that a guy in a white doctor's shirt with you know, this person, he sentenced me to blindness. That was how I felt. It was, I know it's a little bit childish because of course he didn't do that, but you know, that's the way I received it. And then the title sort of says, okay, now what? When you have this sentence, what to do? So the subtitle of the book is called A Journey from Hopelessness Street to Possibility Road. So it already there tells you that it is a journey that you have to go on. It's not, you cannot easily change perception on life crisis. You have to make a process for yourself. So the book is about, it's divided into three parts. And the first part is about, you know, Hopelessness Street, you know, all the traps you put up for yourself. And I tell a lot of stories about, you know, blindness and anecdotes. And then I comment on them, you know, because I had a lot of negativity attached to all the experiences that I had. So I realized that, you know, I have to figure out how you can change your mindset and how you can change your perception. And that's part two of the book, where I go into all the tools. And it's a lot about meditation, mindfulness practice, but also a little bit about how we create, you know, subconscious programs that are running most of our lives. Because most of our lives, we are actually just, you know, walking around on autopilot. And that autopilot is all our habits and our identities. And very rarely are we really present here and now in this moment. So I talk about how mindfulness and meditation were tools that changed the way that I was perceiving things. So part three is about, okay, now you know all that. How do you implement it in your life? And I did, I gave myself challenges. I gave myself four challenges in 4 months. So through 4 months, I had to be what I was talking about. So instead of just thinking about it and, you know, being good at reciting books and all that, I had to live it for at least 4 months. And it became a habit that is, you know, has stuck in my life. So the book is about, you know, how can, if you feel stuck in life, it doesn't need to be blindness. It can be anything. How can you actually get yourself out of this self created prison that we all often find ourselves in?
Yeah, no, and I think what your experience talks about, it applies to a lot of human conditions, right? Not just, you know, blindness. It could be, you know, a job. It could be, you know, like an unhappy relationship. So it doesn't really have to always be about blindness. And that's what I really found interesting with your book, is the fact that it applies to a lot of human conditions.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, you know, in the beginning, I just started talking about this. The first talk that I gave was actually at the Lego group. And a lot of people were actually surprised because they thought I was going to talk about blindness. And then I just spent, you know, 10% of the talk about blindness. And then it was about, you know, when you have this, I have this thing, I can't change that I'm becoming blind, but I can definitely change my perspective on it. And that is the message that I'm trying to convey, that you know, it's never or rarely the situation that we are in that is a problem, but the thoughts that we have about the situation. So I try to teach people, or at least at this stage, just talk about trying to make people aware of the fact that the thoughts that they create of scenarios in their lives, they are actually the reason why they feel bad about them. So if you are able to create a distance between what you experience and how you react to it, then you can actually change the story that you're telling about the situation.
And that's, you know, what I wanted to come on next. Do you still, you know, are you still part of the Lego group? And if so, you know, how has your how is your visual impairment really changed the way you work? You know, how was it before? I mean, I'm assuming a lot of it was visual, a lot of it was involving visuals, and now you know you've come into this particular new phase of your life. I want to know how your work has changed and how do you cope up with it?
Well, I think I unconsciously started transforming myself into more of a writer and a concept developer and storyteller. So somehow I managed to put myself in a situation where I didn't really do much of visualization and creating images in Photoshop, which was something that I did a lot in the early years and actually still do, but it's just very, very demanding because of, you know, that little bit of a tunnel vision. It's just too much on the system. So if you're too much in that for too long, I just get too exhausted from, you know, and then I can't do anything else. So I started being much better at using my body and my language, my voice and my ability to tell stories to just come up with the stories. So I slowly adapted but it hasn't been easy. And I think what I experience right now is that the lesser information, visual information that comes in, is sometimes a problem when I have to then create information that has to come out again. So if the input is a little bit broken or severed or not 100% correct, then I sometimes struggle a little bit with creating the output that is needed, because it comes from a source out of me. Someone asked me to solve a problem, and a lot of the input is visual and references and things I have to look at, and then I sometimes don't really get it, and I maybe misunderstand things. So that's the downside and the challenge that I'm facing right now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I do feel that you're able to communicate as well, really, you know, with your words, mm-hmm. you know, with your talks, and I think with being a storyteller, it's not just about, you know, being able to present something visually, right? Visuals are just one part of the story. I think the story is also the voice, and story is also, you know, the thought process behind it, and so on, right?
Yeah.
So, what's next for Morten? You know, do you often think about it? Do you still want to be in the art space, or do you want to move more into writing? What interests you? And how do you think you would be sort of incorporating this new aspect of your life in your journey forward?
Yeah, of course I've thought about it. You know, it is interesting to be working in an industry where you really use your eyes a lot to create material. And I have, of course, made conscious thoughts around how long can I do that, you know, on that level that it demands. So that's also why I started out a couple of years ago to think about, you know, what can I do? Well, you know, what can I use? How can I use losing my vision in a way that makes sense for me and for other people? So that's why I have two identities, almost like I'm the art director working for the Lego Group, and then I'm the speaker and the author, Morten, you know, doing other things at next to my work at the Lego Group. And I don't know what will happen. It's like a floating process. I'm curious, and every day I just start like fresh, and let's see what life will bring and where it will take me.
Yeah, and I think it's a great way to sort of, you know, come to the tail end of the podcast, because every guest I have here, I really ask this question, and the question is, what is your mantra, Morten? If you want to leave our audience with one mantra, what would that be?
I think my mantra is maybe a question: are you happy? That's it, and that's very, very simple. And I know every time I ask myself that question, the answer doesn't come from the thinking mind; it comes from the body. If I ask that question, and I feel that I'm happy, the body just responds with, you know, all the hairs on my my body, there's a sensation in my stomach. All the cells in the body just ignites. And if that doesn't happen, there's something else going on. Then I have to look at what is going on right now. What am I doing right now that I need to change? So I think the mantra is always to be curious about what I think and feel in this moment, which is the only moment that exists. So getting out of the time continuum and getting into the now continuum is how I live my life.
It's amazing. And I think, you know, it's a question that I feel in our very busy lives that we all lead, we don't really ask a lot, right?
No.
Yeah, it's a question that we probably should be asking more to ourselves. And with that, I think we come to the end of the podcast. And I thank you a lot. Thanks a lot for joining us today, Morten. And for everybody listening to the show, please go check out Morten's book, Sentence to Blindness. I started reading it last night, and so far I've really been enjoying it. And I look forward to really reading the whole thing and implementing the tools, because I think we all have things that we would like to change in our lives, and we all like, you know, want to have things that we want to improve on. And I think the book would be a great addition to that. So please do check it out. Thanks once again, Morten, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to tell people that the book's also made available as audiobook. So it's possible also just to listen. And it's actually myself narrating it. So there's a little bit of personality there in the book as well.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to check out the audiobook for sure. I think that is always more interesting for me when the author reads out the books, because it does bring out the true essence and the personality of the person writing it. Thank you once again. Yeah, thanks, Morten.
Thank you very much for having me and inviting me.